Welcome to Straightforward, the engaging audio series of North Group Consultants designed to provide you with direction for your future. In this edition, Roger welcomes his guest, Brian Black, partner and senior consultant at North Group Consultants. Roger and Brian will be discussing Brian's leadership journey. Now from North Group Consultants, here's Roger North.
Over the years, I've been fortunate to attract some pretty fine people, the North Group, and I find it very interesting as I circulate among our client base and our friends. Each time we get a new person that chooses to be associated with North Group, I get the same question every time. And the question is a very logical one and a simple one, and they say, "Well, Roger, what will so-and-so be doing?" And I always answer this question the same way. He'll be doing the same thing that the rest of us do. And that's true of our newest partner and senior consultant, Mr. Brian Black. Brian, welcome to Straightforward. It's just terrific to have you here with me today.
Well, thank you, Roger. And it's just terrific to be here with you. It's a real privilege.
Thank you. We're going to have fun talking about your leadership journey here today. But I did want to emphasize that, you know, as I look back on almost 17 years in this business, people will sometimes ask you, what do you think has been some keys to your staying power? And I think if I would identify two things, I would identify the one thing that I've already mentioned, which is somehow I've been fortunate to attract some of the very finest people in my life are part of our firm. And second is, we've stayed focused on the same mission for 17 years. Our mission is through sustained relationships, we help people and organizations grow toward their highest potential. We've stayed focused on our core values and the organizations that we serve, and we haven't added a whole lot to it, and we haven't taken much away from it. And when you focus on one thing, you ought to be able to get pretty good at it. And I'm hoping that we're on our way to getting pretty good at this thing of helping people and organizations grow toward their highest potential. And I'm very enthusiastic, Brian, to have you join in that mission. And I'm hopeful that the mission and what it stands for was one of the things that attracted you to us. And maybe that singular focus that we have was attractive to you as well.
That's absolutely right. I have been privileged to be able to watch you and your team work with clients that we've shared, and I've seen it in action. And it's a very appealing and very compelling vision that really resonates with really who I am.
I think that's what brought us together here in the almost year-long conversation and dance, if you will, that we had about how we could make this thing work. I mentioned previously that people routinely ask me, now, what's so-and-so going to be doing? Jerry Murray joined me. What's Jerry going to be doing? When Craig joined us, what's Craig going to be doing? And now I'm getting that question even more in your case because, of course, for the past number of years, you've been a practicing attorney and a partner in a very fine law firm, Gibble, Crable & Hess in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. So I'm getting that question even more. And I think what sits in the background is, why in the world would an attorney, a JD, a Juris Doctor, want to become a consultant? And so I guess I'll ask you that question. Why would you want to become a consultant, Brian?
Well, I think one of the things that I observed in my practice, I had the privilege, like you did, of working with so many wonderful business owners, family businesses. But the difference that I saw between the work that you do and your team does and the work that I did is often I was invited in late in the conversation. And oftentimes, lots of pathways have been set. Maybe things have been addressed or not addressed along the way. And I'm called in at a season, perhaps, to help with a portion of a transition, for example. And I realized that there was so much more to the process than I was able to feed into as the attorney. So my heart was, how can I find a way to engage a client in a broader conversation over a broader period of time and not just be called in for a discrete moment of an engagement? And that probably is what appealed to me the most, the ability to be part of the journey on a longer scale, on a deeper scale, at a deeper level, Roger.
And I think that makes a lot of sense. I think if Dennis and Daryl and Jerry and Craig and some of our other colleagues were here, they would say that we do our best work when we're brought in earliest. And the issues that we work at are transitional, generally speaking, in nature. And then as a result of the transitional, they become relational and they become organizational. And one leads to the other. And when we can do that well from the beginning, identify a place that an organization is and a place that they want to get to, then we can help them draw the map and walk the roads of that map, the inevitable detours that occur. Relationships form out of that, and then we're able to form a partnership that helps businesses and families and organizations grow from one stage to the next. And it's just a real privilege to do that. Brian, one of many things on top of your character that attracted us to a conversation about you was you just have this tremendous varied vocational background, which I'd love to walk through here today in the next few minutes. But even prior to that, you have a very fine family background. So tell us a little bit about your growing up years in neighboring Chester County and your family life and things of that nature.
I grew up on the edge of a town called Spring City, Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. which is a small town right along the Schuylkill River, northern Chester County. And my father was in the insurance business for most of his life, and that's the business that I grew up in and knew. And it was a small town insurance agency, and my father was just connected and rooted there so deeply. And that's the environment I grew up in with my mom and dad and one sister, 2 years younger, and really started to create that hunger for just building relationships. That's the family that I grew up in. Everywhere that I went, people would say, "Oh, you're Blackie's son." That was my father's nickname.
Blackie.
"You're Blackie's
okay.
son. You're Blackie's son." And as a young kid, I didn't like that label. But as I've grown older, I've come to deeply appreciate that I am, in fact, Blackie's son, and what a privilege it's been to be his son and to be the son of my mom as well. Met my wife, Laurie. We're almost 28 years marriage. Met my wife in middle school.
Wow.
Went to the
okay.
same middle school and high school.
Not love at first sight.
Not love at first sight, but she was a pretty young lady even in seventh grade. Mm-hmm. So I would say my eyes took to her pretty quickly. But we started dating when I first got my driver's license.
Okay.
I told my parents, the day I get my license, I'm taking this Laurie Sheeler out, and that's exactly what happened. We started dating.
Pretty serious intentionality there.
It was.
I guess the question of what she saw in you will remain forever a mystery.
It's a mystery to this day.
Join the club.
We started dating at 16, and really, through high school, she went off to Westchester University for piano and voice as a major, did not finish that degree, pursued some other things, but I went off to Franklin and Marshall College. And at that point, we separated for a little while, but the Lord saw fit to bring us back together in the later years of college, and the story goes on from there. We're 27 and a half years married.
Oh, congratulations.
Yes, thank you.
How did you choose Franklin and Marshall, and what were your educational and then vocational aspirations when you made that choice?
Well, when I was looking at schools, I was looking pretty broadly. I was considering medical school and medicine as a career very seriously. Looked at a large number of schools, Ivy League schools, F&M, some other schools like F&M. And interestingly enough, in the end, I have to be honest, I made my decision on two criteria. One is F&M had a tremendous pre-medicine reputation. So in that sense, it was an easy choice. But also at that time, Laurie was at Westchester University, and I realized I'd like to be proximate this lady that I thought I would marry someday.
Mm-hmm,
and in
mm-hmm.
fact, that's the second reason I chose F&M.
Okay.
I was looking at medical school at that point and opted to major in chemistry and also in English. So I wound up pursuing a double major and a double degree.
That has to be one of the more unique double majors I've ever heard of.
It was.
Wow.
In hindsight, it was a wonderful journey to be able to walk, in a sense, both camps of the technical sciences and deeply embracing kind of that whole process approach to learning, but also on the other side, as I've shared with you in the past, to be able to sit in a poetry seminar and just really absorb some of the other portions of my soul that really connected with the arts.
What do you see looking back on your college years that was formative for you?
Well, there were several things that were formative. One is I was very fortunate to have some very significant relationships with professors at F&M. And it was formative in the sense that they took me in fairly early under their wing. I worked in laboratories with professors who really were interested in me as a person. And that was extremely helpful. Second thing was my faith journey really matured and ripened in college. I actually worked in youth ministry during the years I was in college, and the pastor of this local congregation and that congregation embraced me as a young man. Those two things, I think, really shaped and helped me to understand a little bit deeper who I really was and who God had intended and wired me to be.
That's interesting because we often hear something very different from that with respect to young people and their faith when they go away to college. So it's good to hear it went in a different direction for you. It's encouraging. And when you graduated, you talked earlier about medical school. I know you didn't attend medical school. What altered that plan?
Double majoring in college really took me to almost a year-round educational experience. And I realized that I was really just fatigued. Just being very honest, I was just really tired of pushing so hard. I decided I would take a year or two to defer any graduate school. And as a result of that, decided that I thought teaching would be a good way to have some gap years to do a little more exploration.
Sure.
And I ended up getting an opportunity right in the backyard of F&M, which is a school called Lancaster Country Day School.
It's a private prep school.
Private prep mm-hmm. school, which was K through 12, and gave me the opportunity with my backgrounds in chemistry and English to actually teach in both subject areas. So I ended up teaching 7th grade English, three sections of 7th grade English, and also 10th grade or high school chemistry. And I just delighted in being able to pick up both of those areas in an environment that just was very nurturing for a young teacher who was very green and still feeling his way through.
So you mean it was nurturing not only for the student, but it was nurturing for you as a rookie teacher, and you didn't have an education degree, correct? So
correct.
You hadn't gone through all the pursuits of learning actually how to deliver on the subject matter. So you were learning on the job.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
But back in that day, the headmaster at the school was a man named John Jarvis. John was a Scottish educator, classically educated man who really mentored me heavily in a mm-hmm. very gentlemanly, loving way mm-hmm. and really stood behind me. And those 3 years at Country Day were some of the most transformational years for me, just coming to know myself and just in growing as a young man.
What's one lesson you would pull out of those vocational years?
Well, there's a number of lessons. I guess probably the one that I've learned the most is I learned in that season to begin to learn to dwell in truth in terms of what my real strengths were, where my weaknesses were. I think starting out, there's a temptation to want to do what others expect you to do. These are the gifts we see in you, so we're expecting you to pursue this or that.
Mm-hmm.
But in those early vocational years, I began to realize and was encouraged to realize the power of really coming to dwell in truth. Who am I really? What really fuels me mm-hmm. as a person? And mm-hmm. where do my gifts really lie? Not mm-hmm. just what are the expectations of others.
And as we go through this conversation, you've had several different stages in your life, and I'm just speaking vocational here. Obviously, there's other stages of life beyond vocation, but where you've had to wrestle with that truth of what you really are gifted at and what you're being prepared for. And so those years of teaching prepared you for a next stage of life, which included marriage in there somewhere, and then back to school, if I understand correctly.
That's right. Laurie and I got married, this middle school young lady that I had my eyes on, in my third year of teaching. And from there, eventually, I headed off to law school. And while I headed off to law school at Villanova University School of Law, my dear wife was working in the commercial lines department of an insurance company. So she commuted one way to Reading or Wyomissing, and I commuted the other way to Villanova from Pottstown, Pennsylvania, which is where we landed in those early years after I exited my time teaching.
What was the impetus for going to law school? You're teaching, you're enjoying that environment, you're growing, being nurtured, you're a young married person, and your previous aspiration earlier in life was medical school. Now we're teaching chemistry and English, and we're talking about law school. So at this point, I'm pretty much lost.
Well, you wouldn't be the only person that would say that. Interestingly enough, while I was at Country Day, I had the privilege of working in the summers. Of course, as a teacher, I had summer opportunities. And I wound up working at a firm in Lancaster called Hartman, Underhill, and Brubaker. And in those days, you couldn't go out and purchase packaged software for attorneys, such as litigation management software, things that are commonly on the market today. So through a connection that I had through a parent at Country Day, I was hired there for the summer to kind of create a litigation database or software program for a particularly large case that they had pending in the civil court. So I spent the summer, my first teaching summer, in the law firm and began to discover that a lot of the advocacy and a lot of the connections that these lawyers were making with their clients was very appealing to me. It brought a balance of daily learning and the need to be every day facing new complexities in balance with relationships and developing relationships and the appeal of those two, not that dissimilar to medicine in many ways, but the appeal of those two in the context of the experience I was having made it really clear to me that pursuing a law degree was an absolutely wonderful fit for my wiring and my gifts.
And it has been a wonderful fit for you. Did you go to law school full time and Laurie continued to work?
I did.
Okay.
I was very, very fortunate. Not only did I do that, but Hartman, Underhill, and Brubaker gave me the opportunity to work with them through my law school summers even part-time through the school years. And so in many ways, economically, they helped me through law school.
Okay. And your law school experience was formative also?
Law school for me was absolutely one of the most wonderful seasons of my life. First of all, it's a luxury, I think, for a later 20-year-old adult to be pursuing graduate education in something that they love. What a luxury.
Sure, it is a luxury.
And I would look around and I'd think, how fortunate I am to be able to do it. Second, my background turned out to be very, very helpful for law school. Chemistry and English, unplanned, of course, at the time, turned out to be the perfect background for law school. And I really felt that I thrived in law school. I not only performed very well in the class, but I really connected and clicked well with the professors and just the whole nature of how legal education works. So I just absolutely, to say, had a blast. I really did. I had a blast in law school.
And you came right out of law school to the practice of law, correct?
I did. I joined the firm of Hartman, Underhill, and Brubaker, which is a name we've heard here. They were very gracious to extend me a very nice opportunity to come right back to Lancaster, which is where I knew all through law school, I knew that I wanted to come back to Lancaster County.
Mm-hmm.
And what was funny is in law school, my classmates would say, well, what are you going to do, Brian? What are you going to do? And I said, well, I'm going to go back to Lancaster and most likely practice at Hartman, Underhill, and Brubaker. And my classmates at Villanova would look at me quizzically and say, what are you going to do there? Mm. As if the earth was flat and it fell off after you got a little bit west of Chester County.
They thought that was too small time? Would that have been the implication?
Absolutely.
Okay.
You know, most of my peers there were thinking about Philadelphia, New York, Chicago, Washington, Baltimore, larger city practice. And I was thrilled to know that there's this gem called Lancaster County that I could come back and, Lord willing, raise my family and practice law at a very, very high level with some phenomenal entrepreneurs, which this county is blessed to have.
Well, isn't that the truth?
Absolutely.
Yeah, we experienced that over and over again. And you stayed at that firm for how long and learned what?
I stayed at that firm after graduation from law school for about 6 years. And when I got to the point where it was about time to make a partnership decision, I made a transition. But I learned how to practice law there. Law school taught me some of the substance of law, but you do not learn how to practice law in law school. And I don't think there's any mystery to that. I think even law schools would acknowledge that. But there I was mentored by some very exceptional attorneys. One named Jack Hartman, who was one of the founding partners. Jack was an incredible mentor to this young lawyer who had no business sitting in with some of the clients that Jack introduced me to. Another attorney there, George Brubaker, also mentored me. So what I was privileged to do was to learn how to practice and serve clients, not just ethically, but really to do it with some level of passion and a level of commitment to the people that we were serving. I'm grateful that that was poured into me in those early years.
Really, I think all of us, when we look back on our career, there are certain people that just chose to expose us to situations, as you put it, that we really probably don't belong in at that stage of life. But because people see some potential in us, or maybe they just want to be kind to us, they pull us into those situations and they become educational, informative, and propel us ahead. And that's obviously what happened to you. And then there came a point where you were doing reasonably well there. So the question of whether you wanted to become a partner, which would have implied a lifelong commitment, I guess, came to you and you answered it how?
Well, I didn't get quite to the partnership question, to be honest.
Okay.
I knew it was coming. And knowing that it was coming, I realized that I was going to reach a fork in the road. I was very fortunate that my practice had, by that point, narrowed down to some really key areas that were both that I enjoyed and that were also, I think, very fruitful for me, and that was estate planning, business succession planning, and working in the arena of business owners and individual entrepreneurs.
Okay.
And my practice had already started to narrow that way. So I was fortunate enough to be able to join two other friends and colleagues of mine who I had known professionally all through those years. I joined them as a third partner in a law firm that was actually housed up in the little village of Hinkletown.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
The firm there, we called it James Clark and Black. And it's the only time my name has actually been on a firm or anything I've been associated with. And we really had a niche practice. Our practice niche was exactly what I've said, working with business owners and families and individuals and entrepreneurs in terms of their succession, business planning, formation, and then personal planning.
Mm-hmm.
Really a passion of mine that's never really faded in all these years.
And, you know, as we're talking here, of course, I've known all this as part of our friendship and so forth, but it strikes me again how formative all these things are for the next vocational stage of life. And certainly we would say that about your affiliation with our firm, North Group. And there was another piece in there that is particularly important to us because you're a teacher and a practicing attorney, all of which brought you to some excellent skills that will be very useful in your practice at North Group, but also some organizational experience. As an organizational executive, at some point you took advantage of an opportunity to become part of the executive team at the Brethren Village Retirement Community. Talk about how that came about and briefly about your experience there.
Brethren Village was a wonderful season of life for me, but what happened there was I, at that point, was an ordained Brethren pastor and still am, and so had some pretty deep roots with Brethren Village organizationally. Plus, my practice involved some level of what we would call elder law, which is legal issues that would affect seniors. And those two things kind of converged. I was approached by Brethren Village not too many years into that season of private practice, where they had invited me to join the leadership team with an eye toward growing the team in a different direction and perhaps just kind of thinking long term. And the first time I was approached, I turned it down, not really sensing that was the right season, but reapproached several years later. And through some prayer and discernment, we really made a decision that this was a real opportunity, as you've stated, to kind of get on the organizational side of things.
Yes.
To get into an organization that I cared about deeply and to work at high-level leadership, work at culture, work at growing a team of people in an organization that I deeply loved, that was all about serving.
And does wonderful work.
And does wonderful work.
Yeah.
My experience there was very formative and very challenging. I had the privilege of working with so many committed people. And what I learned in that journey was how eager people are to be well led and how much that matters in the experience of the organization, not just for the people that are being served, the residents, but for simply the people that have chosen to work there, that have made it their life's work. That was absolutely transformational for me to see the level of impact that executive leadership can have if done well throughout the organization.
And Brian, we would resonate 100% with you on that. We see that every day in our work, that people do want to be well-led. And on some level, they understand what that means for them. And on some level, they understand what that means for their colleagues and the organization that they've dedicated themselves to. And when it happens, it's a beautiful thing. And when it isn't happening, it's a frustrating thing. And of course, for us at North Group, we feel privileged when we're asked to come in and to help people along that way. Most of our clients that engage us are doing well, and they just want to maximize the opportunity that they have to lead well, to build an animated, energetic, mission-focused culture, and to be called alongside to help focus people like that lead well, create organizations of purpose, and to animate the best of their people. It's just a privilege. It's a privilege to lead well, like you did at Brethren Village and other places. But it's also a real privilege to influence those who seek to lead well, which is the role that we're usually called in for. So you spent a number of years there and learned the organizational piece and how hungry people are to be led well, and no doubt provided that kind of leadership to folks. And then you went back to the practice of law again.
I did. I enjoyed my time at Brethren Village and felt that that was a strong period of transformation for me. One thing I realized, though, is that my greatest and strongest gifts by far were being able to engage folks in an advisory relationship, being on a journey with them through process. And while that is part of the leadership journey that I had at Brethren Village, no doubt, the opportunity to get close in with a wide array of business owners, those that were in that journey, was most exciting and was really, I'd say, as my sweet spot. And so I made the transition to Gibble, Crable, and Hess, wonderful opportunity to join a bunch of people whom I was close friends with, many of them for many, many years. It was an easy transition. I left Brethren Village with great blessing from that organization, with an understanding of who I am and just sending me on with their blessing. And I joined an organization that afforded me the opportunity to develop those areas that I most loved and to grow that with a good team of people who are all committed to serving clients at a high level.
And I think As we've responded recently to this question of, well, what is Brian going to be doing with you? And we say, well, he's going to be doing the same thing that the rest of us do, which is broadly this business of helping people and organizations grow toward their highest potential. And of course, we do that in a variety of ways, but most of it is really just focused on encouraging people toward healthy organizations, and healthy organizations are led by healthy, engaging leaders. And so people have been asking this question. In fact, I didn't even tell you about this. I got an email from a mutual friend of ours. In fact, I didn't even know he was a friend of yours, although it doesn't surprise me, the other day. And he said, hey, Roger, congratulations on having Brian on your team. That's great. But I'm wondering if he can still be my attorney. So I'm going to answer that question by saying you'll be well served by the attorneys in his firm where your documents continue to exist. And a relationship with Brian and our firm is available to you if needed. But you won't be in the practice of law. But many of the things you did within the practice of law will be very much a part of your everyday service as a consultant of North Group. Would you agree with that? And would you like to expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I'm not sure I could say it better than that. But there's a real privilege of being able to have this critical body of knowledge and information that just have been sewn into me over these years as an attorney. And I can bring that to bear, and I'm looking forward to bringing that to bear onto the relationships that I'm able to have through North Group. But that is one area that I think does deserve some clarity, and that is that when I'm working with clients in my capacity as a senior consultant here with North Group, I'm not serving as their legal counsel. Again, I'll bring to bear as much as I can on the situation. But when it comes time to perhaps prepare documents or to implement on paper the plan that may be developed, we would be encouraging them, of course, to turn that over to their own attorney. And certainly the firm that I've served at can serve them, but they would have their option of choosing whatever legal counsel that they would want to work with.
I think if we go back a few minutes in our conversation, we talked about how you serving in as attorney, you were often brought in late in the process. Okay, we've made these kinds of decisions and now we need documents prepared to reflect that. And I would guess that many of those situations you got into and saw the point that they were at and maybe wished that they had gotten to a different point or gotten there in a different way. And our privilege is that very often we're brought in when people are just starting to think about what it might mean for a next generation of an organization. In a nonprofit, they're starting to think about, well, what's it going to be like in the organization without this prominent leader who has led us from the seed of an idea to serving a wide variety of people? We get family businesses coming to us and saying, hey, we're thinking ahead to what it might be like to move from second generation to third, from brothers and sisters to cousins, or whatever that might mean. What's that going to mean for us? Can you walk with us through that process? We see that in partnerships, business that not necessarily related to each other, but they're partners and they feel strongly about wanting to perpetuate that partnership and to do it well. And in most cases, we get invited in pretty early in that process and we're able to assess what's there, which is part of our initial service, and then we're able to help them draw a map, if you will. And the map isn't usually direct. There's detours on it because life happens and opportunities come over the period of years that you're working on these transitions. But our privilege is we get called in early most of the time. And of course, that's best case scenario. So I think in that way, you'll be involved in many of the same conversations you have been over many years, but hopefully be brought in earlier and be able to bring wise counsel to them along the way with both your personal and organizational experience. Is that the way you say it?
That's absolutely my hope. That's the reason that I'm here and I'm a partner with Roger North and the rest of the crew. I would say that for me, there's probably the saddest engagements I've ever had as an attorney are engagements when I'm called in late and you realize that they have simply failed at the process.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're really doing now is cleaning up
mm-hmm.
whatever's left to be cleaned up. The most exciting engagements I've had the privilege of having is being involved that I could be a part of that conversation early enough and perhaps help to persuade or help to direct in a positive way for a desired outcome.
And there's a real human and organizational cost to not doing those transitional processes well and to not starting early enough. Relationships get off track, missions get off track, people don't get well served, employees don't get focused on, they don't get well led because other things are intervening on that. And so we just find it a privilege when organization, say, hey, can we just have a conversation about what this transition thing might look like and how we could start out well and how we could have the important conversations early before they become urgent conversations. And more we're finding that organizations and families, and as I mentioned, not-for-profit organizations are contacting us very early on and say, hey, can we just have a conversation about how you help people do that? And many of those, we're privileged that they result in client relationships, but sometimes they're just a conversation and then they come back 2 or 3 years later and say, hey, remember when we talked about that a couple years ago? Let's talk about what the first step might look like. And I consider every one of those conversations to be a high privilege because you have that opportunity to really influence and guide early on in the process. And I think that's where our heart and our mission lies.
I'm right with you on that. And you say it so clearly with such passion. I feel that same passion.
Brian, we probably talked about getting together for years in a way, but more specifically, I think for about 8 or 9 months over the passage of time with conversations with myself and Jerry and Dennis and Daryl and Craig. What along the way encouraged you that this was the season that you should head toward in your life? We've talked about several different seasons you've had as a school teacher, as an attorney, as a not-for-profit executive, as an attorney again, and now as a consultant. What was encouraging to you that this was the right choice for this stage in your life?
There were probably several very definite factors that came together to make it clear to me and to my wife, Laurie, that this was the next season the Lord had for us. One is, and we talked about this earlier, this whole nagging sense that I had in practice, as much as I love practicing law, that there was a bigger picture, that there was a bigger piece to this journey in working with leaders and organizations. And so it was that kind of holy discontent, if you want to call it that, that there's more to this that I think that I'd like to be part of. Also, my wife, Laurie, is dealing with a fairly serious health issue in this season. She's dealing with a very serious cancer. We just started our 4th year of that journey, and she's a wonderfully positive, hopeful person in the journey.
She certainly is. She's an inspiration.
And I've been very fortunate, just very blessed to have this woman by my side encouraging me all along through these seasons. And now in the season when she needs encouragement, she's offering it to me. But in this season, we began to realize long before our formal conversation started, Roger, with us, that God was really shaking some things in our life in a good way, really preparing me, preparing us for kind of a next season. We didn't know what it was, and I don't want to overly spiritualize it, but there was a real sense that there was this season of preparation coming. And so when I believe it was Jerry Murray first broached the subject earlier in 2013, saying, Brian, would you ever entertain a conversation about potentially joining North Group? Initially, my first reaction out of the gate over that breakfast meeting was, no, I'm very happy doing what I'm doing. But when you all teamed up on me, as you did.
We did team up a little bit there.
In a very good way. But when we began to have those conversations and Laurie and I began to talk through it, it became actually a very exciting conversation to have and would have moved, I think, much faster had it not just been for the sake that we just knew that if it was going to be right, it was going to be done deliberately. And if God was in it, that it would find its way to a finish line. And you were very gracious, you and the whole team, in being very open-handed about that very same concept.
There's no value in rushing something as important as this kind of decision on both sides of the equation, for you and Laurie and your family, or for us. And so we took our time, but we're glad we arrived at the place we are, and we're really looking forward to having you helping us with our mission through sustained relationships. We help people and organizations grow toward their highest potential. We think there's going to be many more opportunities for you to be involved in that mission to bring value to our current clientele as well as folks that might choose to be our clients in the future. And it's just been a real privilege to have this conversation with you this morning and to welcome you to the partnership at North Group.
Roger, thank you. I'm humbled, I'm honored, and I'm very much looking forward to what the days ahead will hold for us together.
Thank you, Brian. Have a great day, everyone.
North Group Consultants continues to provide direction for your future. Through sustained relationships, we identify issues by conducting assessments, provide assistance during organizational transitions, and develop leaders through coaching and accountability. As always, thank you for listening to Straightforward.